Abigail, don't follow him. You don't know who he really is.
Do I know who you really are, Silas? Tell me, who are you?
I don't want to talk about me. I need you to understand who he is, who they are. They are not who they say they are.
Well, apparently neither are you, my king. You are also not who you say you are, or who people believe you are. Do you really think the group doesn't know who you are? They can feel it, Silas. They can taste it. They know what is in your heart and what you are trying to do. So, let me help you.
Abigail, don't! Put that knife down. I don't want to lose you like this. Please!
My king, you know it is what I have to do. You have always known this. So, please, stop trying to...
What? Stop trying to do what? Abigail, what do you mean?
New Kingdom Radio Theater.
New Kingdom Radio Theater presents The Beggar, the first film by the writer-director of The Rise of King Asylus, J.V. Torres. Get a glimpse of King Asylus's America in this thrilling short flick. Now making its rounds through the film festival circuit, the only place to watch this movie is on our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/KingAsylus and sign up for as little as $1. Critics say The Beggar is outstanding. First-time director J.V. Torres is way ahead of the curve, say indie filmmakers. If you listen to King Asylus, you have to see The Beggar. Go to patreon.com/KingAsylus or click the link in the show notes and watch this thrilling flick today.
It has become a very dangerous time for me and for America. But I am the only one that knows just how grave the danger really is. Let me begin with disclosing I can be honest with certain people about certain things, but not completely honest with everyone in general. Not even with my wife. And it's not because I wish to deceive people. In truth, there are particular details about me, about the world we live in, about how people are governed, that would be so overwhelming, so disheartening, that most would be unable to process it. Perhaps this is a crude analogy, but when small children believe in Santa Claus and get excited about Christmas, well, this is a beautiful thing to marvel at as parents. We feel joy in this deception because children are innocent, and we know when they finally learn the truth, things change. Everything changes when we learn the truth. I certainly changed when I learned the truth about the United States, about who was actually running the country, who chose our leaders in dark halls and secret locations and secret clubs of mostly men who smoked cigars, drank exotic elixirs, and decided the lunacy that overtook our country and ultimately the world. For generations, these people marveled at how their plans directed the people, how their adaptation of reality was largely accepted without question, and created the social landscape necessary for their desired malice. But unlike parents who find children's belief in Santa Claus as cute, these diabolical parents of society gazed upon their grand manipulation with zealous wickedness. Thank you. How do I know this? Because I was one of them. The president was right. This whole thing was planned a long time ago. And I was one of the planners. I was one of the highest-ranking officials of the Monster Group. They aren't really called the Monsters, but I call them that because that's what they are. Most of them are not people like you and I. If people knew who this group was, where they came from, and who their leader is, well, let's just say Santa is just an anagram. So you see, in order to do what is right for my people, I have to turn against them. Because they deceived me, too. However, they think they are invincible, or at least literally unstoppable. They're not. And I have a plan. I know only one of them is immortal. And the rest can die just like you and I. As much as they know about my weaknesses, I also know theirs. And I have to fight this battle completely alone in the dark. I can only bring in some people, sometimes, and only do some things, because no one knows them like I do. And everything has to be perfect, or we will all pay a price far worse than what happened to the U.S. My one advantage is they underestimate me.
In spite of King Asylus's inner troubles, most people were oblivious to his conflicts. He was mostly loved by the citizens of America. His image seemed to be everywhere and always with smiles and bright colors. He was a champion for the working class and promoted families staying together. So pictures of the king and his family were a fixture in society, both in public and even in people's homes. America became a country with great national pride and also more religious, with much of the population declaring themselves Christian. Of course, people of different faiths and even atheists were protected under the king's laws. People had become richer too. Poverty was virtually non-existent. And if any group or individual openly spoke out against the king or the nation, they were quickly arrested. The king wanted people to feel proud of their country and proud to be Americans. No matter the cost, nor who it put him at odds with.
Let me medicate. Your Majesty, I understand you are heading to Washington tomorrow for the annual summer celebrations and to meet with England's King George. I imagine this is simply a matter of public relations, and I'm only mentioning this because at our last couple of sessions, you expressed immense irritability at the very mention of King George. And the more I thought about it, the more concerned I became. Was there something about England's king we should talk about? Perhaps you should have your meeting with him before your address to the people?
I really like this new couch, Dr. Ezekiel. Oh, yeah, about King George. I would rather meet with him after. Besides, I've had a few conversations with him on the phone. I will say there's something very odd about him, but I don't want him to think I feel that way. You know, like when people say, don't show a dog fear because they can sense it.
There have been studies that indicate subtle changes in biological chemistry and vibration emissions that animals are sensitive to, so yes, there is some truth to that.
Something in his voice triggers something in me. It's like I know he's hiding something. Maybe he's trying to get into my head.
Forgive me, sir, but if his goal was to get into your head, he's clearly succeeded.
Good point. But here's the thing, Doctor. It's like he's possessed, and it's actually a demon speaking to me, not a man. Perhaps that doesn't make much sense, but it does make me very anxious. Not paranoid or scared, but a feeling similar to what I felt before I engaged the enemy in a gunfight. I realize it isn't the same thing. I'm trying to make sense of it.
Demons again. Your Majesty, are your night terrors getting worse? I was sure you were making progress and were getting better control.
You don't understand, Doctor. It is beyond problematic for me at this point. I find myself not wanting to sleep at all because of these nightmares, these night terrors, whatever you want to call them.
Sir, let's take a moment to relax our minds. First, let's stick to the facts. There are no demons chasing after you. These are dreams of buried memories and guilt that manifest themselves as images in your sleep. They can't harm you, they just spook you. You are more aware of them. You can control your thoughts, your words, your moves in those dreams. Don't freeze, fight the freeze. Walk towards them, not away from them. Look, why don't we try this? Lie down on my new couch, Your Majesty. Put your feet up, close your eyes, and sleep for a little while right here. It's the middle of the day. Perhaps sleeping in the daytime might give you a different experience.
Okay, Doctor. No demons. Not here at this moment, anyway. So, hey, say, this is a comfortable couch. And I am very, very tired. I don't think I slept more than 2 hours last night.
You need your rest, sir. I recommend you take some time right here to do that. Would you like for me to turn the lights down a little to help you relax? Sir? King Silas? It appears he is asleep. Let him rest now. I'll just write down the time. It's 12:09 p.m.
Where am I? What am I doing here? Dr. Ezekiel!
Your Majesty, you are finally awake. How do you feel?
I feel great. Energized. How long was I asleep?
Let me look in my notes here. You went to sleep at 12:09. And now it is exactly 9 o'clock p.m., so just under 9 hours.
Wow! I haven't slept that long since I don't know when.
Well, this is wonderful, sir. I think you will be more than ready for tomorrow's celebrations. I'm actually glad you woke up on your own, because your guards and the Queen and Quentin Capone and the whole world, it seems, have been frantically looking and asking for you, but your assistants informed everyone you were taking some time to rest. I really didn't want to be the one to wake you. Sir, I'm sure cameras will be outside waiting for you. Do you want to freshen up first?
Yes, I suppose I should. I probably look disheveled. Thank you so much, Doctor. And before you ask, I didn't dream anything at all. You know, sometimes dreams don't resurface until later. Well, I can't think of any dreams at this moment. Maybe I didn't dream anything at all. With any luck, I didn't. Thanks again, Doctor.
You're welcome, Majesty.
Eyewitness News, when you want the news first.
In the news this morning, King Asylus and Queen Rebecca are boarding Air Force One for their trip to Washington, D.C. America's royal family will be meeting with England's royal family for a celebration to commemorate the alliance between the new Kingdom of America and Great Britain. On your screen now is Air Force One about to take off from New England.
Rebecca, can I tell you something? I believe England's King George hates me.
Why do you think that? He hasn't even met you yet. Or perhaps you set him off in a phone conversation. I know how you get sometimes. You really don't have any phone manners, my love.
Capone thinks he hates me. He made a good point the other day, and you just alluded to the fact that this will be our first face-to-face meeting. I think he has avoided me as long as he could.
I'm sure there's a good reason for that. Besides, you met with the Prime Minister a number of times. He's the one with the power in that country, not George.
That's kind of the big joke, my love. In public, King George is a figurehead with no governmental powers. But behind the scenes, he's a high-level officer of that group. He and his privileged family are an army of reptiles. You know how they operate. I tell you, the whole public song and dance makes me sick. At least in America, we have the gall to say the king is in charge and bleeds human blood. George is a cold-blooded recipient of welfare for the rich elite. Just sickening.
Sounds like you have no love for him either. I think you are just worried he'll try to make you feel inferior, Silas. And this is beneath you. King George is probably a snob, but harmless in the grand scheme of things.
I disagree. I believe he is much more powerful than anyone realizes. Think about it. Since Russia backed those separatist groups in the war, England basically took over Western Europe and Russia. King George is always on the news visiting or doing some charity something or other. I'm telling you, there is more to all that. Sure, they have puppet leaders there, but they are extensions of Great Britain, and George is involved in all the governing. I'm sure of it. That makes George much more of a force than anyone gives him credit for. It's underhand, exactly the way they like it. And I believe these European alliances are meant to intimidate America and eventually destroy us. I don't trust them one bit.
Asylus, are you worried they'll outsmart you? Because they won't. Are you worried they'll outgun you? Don't be. America will always have the advantage because they have you. You're not some upper-crust frat that had a silver spoon your whole life. You fought in wars. You led men and women to victory on the battlefield. You clawed and fought and outsmarted everyone all the way to the throne. You have something they'll never have. Guts and brains and the experience of war and triumph. I will say this to you, my love. They will be arrogant and condescending when in reality they should bow and kiss your ring.
God, I love you, woman. I mean, I really, really do.
Never forget that, Asylus. Never forget who I am to you. And never forget that what you do on the world stage is for America. So take your personal feelings out of it.
England's King George presented an image to the world, an image of benevolence and charity. Much like Asylus, he was loved by his people. But unknown to everyone, King George was evil incarnate. He was an instrument of wicked plans orchestrated by the group Asylus referred to as the Monsters. They, like so many, underestimated Asylus, and he eventually figured out who the conspirators were. Because, as Asylus learned in time, that group was not like any other group. They had one goal, and would cannibalize themselves if necessary, and often did so in order to achieve world domination. And at the center of it all was the Grand Trickster himself, an enigmatic figure that goes by the name of Beals. Asylus did not want to meet with King George until after he addressed the public in Washington, D.C., but George insisted. Asylus was already convinced George was merely a mouthpiece for Beals, and in their private meeting, he realized he was right all along.
Well, here it is, the Oval Office. This was once the most powerful office in the entire world.
A pity, really. A funny thing I remember, when I first sat on the throne, someone whispered a similar phrase. Some say England once ruled the world, as Rome once had. But I never hear anyone reference America that way, to be sure.
Perhaps not. But then, it doesn't surprise me, since persons of your caliber seldom hear anything beyond the sound of your own voice.
Huh, I see. As the U.S. President Bush II once eloquently put it, it's going to be the year of the sharp elbow and the quick tongue.
I really don't wish to continue this dance, King George. So let's skip this song and get right to the kiss. Spare me your polished articulation, and just tell me in plain language why we stand among the ghosts of U.S. presidents. Against my wishes, mind you.
Fine. Perhaps you would prefer shav talk, but I'll surely need to bathe afterwards. We hear you're planning a heist of Russia. How ironic, they never recovered from your civil war. But really, their ineptitude does not make you their master, see? I've been sent to warn you, Asylus. Stand down.
Well, George, at least your family can finally be proud of you now. It appears you have been promoted to desperate messenger boy.
Apparently, you want to dance after all. Very well. Asylus, I understand you cannot possibly know the historical intricacies of world affairs, as you've spent so many of your years in bunkers or following orders on the battlefield. I don't blame you for being so ignorant in the dynamics of royal families in Europe that span centuries. You are in way over your head, you see? You're like a, what do you call them in America? Like a stupid redneck with no idea how to behave at galas or formal dinners. Surely, you'd prefer we have conversations at a pub, share cheap ale. That might suit your mood better. So let me help you understand something. You can come to the dinner, as you've bullied your invitation, but don't think for one second you will get to carve the meat.
Let me tell you what, George. We're going to walk out of this office right now, and we are going to smile for the cameras, as is our duty. We will shake hands for the public, and when we depart each other, you will sit behind me at the podium, and you will smile and applaud when I finish my speech. And then, you will return to your secret lair, and you will tell your superiors to send someone next time with a spine. I know you will do this, Your Majesty.
You are so well trained. In America, the king does not run errands for those too cowardice to show their faces in the light of day. Now, as you would say, cheers.
Very well. You've been warned. We've been a group for hundreds of years, Asylus. We've been in this game for thousands. I wouldn't want to be you.
You couldn't be me, George. I have the love of God in my heart. All you have are lies. Now, go sit behind me. Say, you hear that? You hear the crowds? They're cheering for me, George. My people of the New Kingdom of America, I am happy because we have reached the milestone. We are the only superpower in the world. We accomplished this by being united, by standing with each other as brothers and sisters, as God made us to be. We keep our families together. We support each other by buying goods from our neighbors' businesses. We grow together by not spending money we don't have. We did away with credit card debt. We relish what we already have and do not cover the possessions of others. And now we are richer and stronger and happier as a people. But our prosperity has made certain people angry. There are some among us that want to choke us in debt. They feed off of desperation and ignorance. They revile our success, abhor our intelligence as a society. But our spirits will not be broken. Our love of God and patriotism will not be shaken. I say to you, my brothers and sisters, money has no worth greater than the lives, the breath, and the love of the people. When I was blessed with becoming your king, I thought long and hard about what it means to be a king. I was not born into it like my guests behind me. I was not groomed to be king, nor did the thought ever cross my mind when I was in the army. But our old government were like locusts, devouring everything in their path until nothing was left. I had to stand up. I had to take charge. And now we are here, in the light of the sun, in the ascension of goodwill and love. So, my people, let me just say, I love my country. The world is not a possession, but a gift of love. We will defeat the evil in this world, and we will defeat it together.
You have been listening to The Rise of King Asylus, Episode 3, The Monster Group, starring J.V. Torres as King Asylus, Jeff Ellis as Dr. Ezekiel, Meg McDonald as Queen Rebecca, Don Radzinski as Newsreader, Naomi Castillo as Abigail, J.J. Crown as King George, and narrated by Sergei Brezhnikov. This episode features the song Medicate, performed by Maine. Visit Maine's site at www.iammaine.com. Other contributors include Audio Jungle, Inspector J, and Cyclone 8472 at freesound.org, and score by Brian Shaviri. For more information about this production, the music, and the cast, please visit our website at www.theriseofkingasylus.com and subscribe to this podcast. This production is copyrighted 2017 by New Kingdom Radio Theater in Baltimore, Maryland. All rights reserved. And stay tuned for episode 4.